Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. We're continuing Krishna's from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but quoting the 11th canto where Krishna is reminding Uddhava about his intimate pastimes with the gopis. Especially Krishna is making the point to Uddhava that he never actually revealed before how much separation Krishna is feeling from the gopis. So Uddhava learned the highest secrets when he visited Vrindavan and found out the depth of the attachment of the gopis for Krishna. Having assimilated that, Krishna is able now, just before his departure, to reveal to Uddhava how much attachment he, Krishna, has for the gopis in return. Okay. So, continuing. In the last chapter, the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita,
Takshapa Preshta Tamena Nita Moyaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Chanarda Vata Kunaranga Tasam Hina Moya Kalpasama Bubuhu. Dear Uddhava, all of those nights that the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved, in the land of Vrindavan, seemed to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt that those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma.
Oh, but I'm reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita now, so you don't have it. It's actually, well, this is 11th canto, Chapter 12, verse 11. I don't think I included that in this meeting. Anyway, this is the commentary of Sanatana Goswami. In this verse of the 11th canto, Krishna acknowledges the terrible distress the gopis experienced on his account. He addresses Uddhava as Anga, indicating that Uddhava is as dear to him as his own body. Anga means body, also. He describes how the pleasure of the rasa dance, which he shared with his beloved gopis, passed as if in a single moment, even though the rasa lila lasted for several nights. As certain smriti shastras explain, that means Puranas in this case, the expression nights, here spoken by the word kshapaha, can also mean days and nights. The rasa dance did not end in a single night, but the Supreme Lord's special energies made it continue over the course of many days and nights. Although outsiders were not aware of the fact, Krishna and the gopis celebrated the rasa lila for a long time without interruption. That the gopis experienced the extended festival of the rasa dance as if it lasted only a moment is proof of how happy Krishna's pure devotees become in his intimate association. Only those moonlit autumn nights when Krishna danced with them passed so quickly for the gopis, not other nights. Those other nights in which they suffered from Krishna's absence seemed to last millions of years. Or else, considering that Krishna would manage to sneak out from his home almost every night to meet with the gopis, all nights in general, and not just the season of the Ras Lila, passed very quickly for the gopis. And it was the daytimes which were excruciatingly long for them. Krishna admits in this statement that the gopis' great love for him has resulted in their being cast into total misery. A friend might ask Krishna, therefore, why not bring the gopis to Dwarka and make them happy again? Krishna answers, however, that this idea is not feasible. The rasa dance was a source of delight for himself and the gopis because he enjoyed it with them in Vrindavan. Neither Krishna nor the gopis can feel the same kind of ecstasy anywhere else but in Vrindavan. Neither Krishna nor the gopis can feel the same kind of... Only in Vrindavan, Krishna wanders among his herds of cows and dresses himself as a cow herder. Only in that environment is the highest ecstasy perceivable. Unfortunately, Krishna confesses he is no longer the same person he was in Vrindavan, but now he has become ungrateful and hard-hearted. Because the gopis, however, have not degraded at all from their original virtues, Krishna considers them much more exalted persons than himself. The next two verses are also from the same passage of the Bhagavatam's 11th canto, chapter 12, verses 12 and 13. Krishna says, I'm not the same person I was in Vrindavan. We can explain this philosophically, that he manifests his vilas expansion of Vasudev in Mathura and Dwarka, but that's not what Krishna is talking about here. I mean, he's actually the same person. There are three or four different Krishnas. Some scholars speculate on that, but these are people who don't have any faith or understanding who Krishna is, to think that actually historically there were several different people who all had the name Krishna. Yeah, there was someone called Krishna who was king of Pundra also, but it's not this, that's not what we're talking about. Krishna is in a different environment, therefore he cannot feel the same ecstasy. He doesn't, when he goes to the city, when he becomes a royal prince, he can't enjoy freely in the same way. He's restricted. His devotees feel restricted. For the devotees of Vrindavan, to go anywhere else is torture. Is hell. Anywhere else is hell, because their ability to be with Krishna is severely restricted. So those who are actually attached to Krishna in Vrindavan never want to go anywhere else. Nanda Maharaj thought he wanted to go somewhere else. He heard somebody talking about how a snake had been caught by some hawk, and the hawk, it was dangling from the hawk's beak. It was Garuda. Not ordinary hawk. Anyway, the snake accidentally touched the Ganga and became immortal. Nanda Maharaj heard about this. Oh, I should go see the Ganga. I should go take Ganga Snan. This is the duty of every pious Hindu, at least once in his life, to take Ganga Snan. Ganga from Vrindavan is 120 kilometers east. And he was prepared to make the journey, to leave the Dham, but Krishna said, you don't have to go. Here in Manasi Ganga, all the holy places are there. And on my command, they will show themselves to you. And so Krishna proved to Nanda Maharaj that everything is contained in Vrindavan. So the devotees in Vrindavan, those who are actually attached to the place, never want to go anywhere else. And Krishna doesn't like to go anywhere else either, but he has his obligations to other devotees. Okay, so I read the next verse. Hare Krishna. Krishna speaking to Uddhava again. Ta navi danmai anushanga badhadiyak swam atmanam adastatiram yata samadho munayobdi toye nadyak pravishta ivanama rupe. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merging into the ocean. And thus are not aware of material names and forms. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies, or of this world, or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. So here is Uddhava, who is a devotee of Krishna. He's an eternal associate of Krishna in Dwarka. He enjoys with Krishna in the rasa of servitude and friendship mixed. But he was privileged to have the association of the Vrijvasis, and especially the gopis. But he cannot enter that same realm of enjoyment in Madhuri Ras. There's a separation. Uddhava will never be able to, he won't become a gopi. He's eternally Uddhava. That he cannot aspire to. He cannot aspire to change his swarup. His swarup is what it is. All of us, our swarup is what it is. Not everybody is meant to be, you know, in Madhurya Rasa. Krishna wants to enjoy varieties of relationships with various devotees. And each of us, according to our constitutional nature, when we push aside all the misconceptions, material misconceptions, we have an innate desire to enjoy, to serve Krishna, to give pleasure to Krishna in a particular mood. And there are five different basic moods, not just one. So Uddhava has his Sthayi Bhava, his Swarup. That will not change. So he cannot share the Sambhoga of Krishna with the gopis in their mood. But what he can share is the Madhurya Rasa in separation. This is the mystery. Although in Sambhoga there's exclusion. Only not everybody can enter the rasa dance. But all the devotees can share the mood of separation of the same gopis. Krishna and the gopis shared the sambhoga, but the gopis shared their viraha bhava with Uddhava, and now Krishna is sharing his viraha bhava with Uddhava. So there's something more democratic or more open about this love of Krishna in separation. There's no exclusion of who can participate and who cannot. Of course, you have to have the adhikar. But at least it doesn't depend on, it's not limited by your swarupa. Anybody wants to experience what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has experienced, of course, to some small extent. Anyone who wants to enter the mood of separation exhibited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, any jiva can. You cannot change your swarup. We want to enter the sambhoga. This is our misconception. This is our wrong idea. Because we can't enter someone else's swarup that's not our own. But in the mood of separation, we can enter. This being given to us. Ananda Goswami begins his Brihad Bhagavatamrita on a very basic level. It's meant for everyone, for neophytes also, beginners. But he's bringing us up to this point of understanding the most confidential secrets of devotional service. But not in the mood of sambhoga, not in the mood of getting some nectar, some spiritual sense gratification out of Krishna. Yes. And the fallen conditioned souls also. But he himself is manifesting that love in the mood of viraha, of separation. You know, we don't worship Lord Chaitanya as Rasaraj, the enjoyer. And we worship him as the one who is aspiring after, like Uddhava, after the lotus feet of the gopis. That's the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's not, you know, we don't see him, we don't worship him as the enjoyer of the gopis. We don't. Maybe some sahajas do, but we don't. Okay. Let me read the translation again and then read the commentary on this verse. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merging into the ocean, and are thus not aware of material names and forms. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies, or of this world, or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. Commentary. The gopis are married women with husbands, children, and household responsibilities. How can their existence be considered superior to the renounced life of self-realized sages who have given up all material attachments? This doubt Krishna answers here. Sages advanced in practice of yamas, niyamas, asanas, pranayama, dhyana, and dharana, according to the Ashtanga yoga system, realize the absolute truth as Lord Vishnu in their perfected samadhi. In that perfect consciousness, they forget all the temporary names and forms of the material world, including the names and forms of their own bodies. The gopis are similar to such sages in that the activities of their minds are all fixed on Krishna. An advanced state of trance they have achieved by virtue of their constant connection with Krishna. Their natural relationship with him of pure love. Like the sages, adept in Ashtanga yoga, they have forgotten everything of this world. Their husbands and children, their own bodies, which are the normal objects of egoistic attachment. Their individual identity as proprietors and enjoyers of the material body, and all hopes for success in this life and the next. They have merged their hearts in total thought of Krishna, just as rivers abandon themselves by merging into the ocean. Being thus so fully dedicated to Krishna, they should be recognized as even greater than the munis who have perfected the Ashtanga yoga system, even while standing in the midst of a blazing fire. The gopis do not become burned, but rather manage somehow to achieve the fulfillment of all their desires. The yogis practicing austerities, in the winter they stand in the water, icy water, and tolerate it. In the summer, it may be hot enough already, but they build fires on all sides, four sides, and they stand in the middle just to get a little more warmth. This is their austerity. But the gopis are standing right in the fire of viraha bhava. They don't get burned. They rather somehow manage to fulfill all their ambitions in life by standing in the middle of this fire. Just like the yogis become successful by their austerities. Tapas doesn't just mean pain. Tapas means concentration. So the yogi's concentration, their sadhana, is to always think about Krishna. The gopis have gained the spiritual strength to very easily turn away from everything material. By simply always remaining in Krishna consciousness, their hearts attracted irrevocably to him in all circumstances. In contrast to them, the munis have to struggle hard to progress through the methods of Ashtanga Yoga, they have to concentrate their minds deeply to bring them under control. And only after long endeavors can they possibly reach the goal of samadhi, in which they can forget material names and forms. The gopis are much greater than the yogic sages because they achieve samadhi easily. But aren't the four kumaras and other self-satisfied sages like them considered the most advanced of saintly persons? This may be the prevalent opinion in ordinary circles, but the gopis actually are more saintly than Sanaka Kumara and his brothers. The gopis are not Atmarama Munis who, merged in their samadhi like rivers flowing into the ocean, are oblivious to the names and forms of Krishna. The gopis forget everything, including their own bodies, but they never forget Krishna's names, forms, and qualities. In this way, they differ from the munis, who are like merging rivers because they want to dissolve their thoughts in forgetfulness, trying to become one with the Supreme. The life of the gopis is very practical and real, full of variety, and imbued with the spirit of devotion to Krishna. Fixing their intelligence completely on Krishna, they never forget his names and forms. Thus they excel all munis by easily realizing the highest limit of happiness and full love of God. In the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Narayan tells the muni Durvasa, Naham atmanam ashase madbhaktai sarubhirvina Shriyam chat yantikim brahman yesham gatiraham para. O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons from whom I am the only destination, I do not desire my transcendental bliss or even the association of my consort, the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. In other words, the Supreme Lord is more attracted to his pure devotees than he is to the goddess Shri. But aren't the gopis of Vrindavan in the same category with her? Aren't they also goddesses of fortune? How then can they be Krishna's most dear devotees? This doubt also Krishna dispels in this discussion with Uddhava in the 11th canto. Earlier, when he was glorifying the gopis, while giving Uddhava the message to convey to them, Krishna had not revealed that he himself was in distress over separation from the gopis. But because if Uddhava let the gopis know this, their condition would only become worse. But now in the 11th canto, Krishna is describing his own glories for Uddhava's satisfaction. And he wants to disprove the popular misconception that he is hard-hearted. For this purpose only, he is now revealing this confidential aspect of the gopis' glories, which establishes beyond a doubt that they are the greatest of saints. To understand the hidden meaning of what Krishna is saying here, we need to read the word, it says in the verse, Ta Navidun. They were not aware, Avidun. They didn't know. They weren't conscious of themselves or this whole world. They were oblivious to everything. Avidun means they didn't know. But to understand the hidden meaning of what Krishna is saying here, we need to read the word Avidun as a present participle instead of a past tense verb. Avidun. They didn't know. But no, we'll have to read it a different way. Not knowing. Present participle. So we have to read it as a present participle instead of a past tense verb, which we can indeed do without violating the rules of Sanskrit grammar, because the word's ambiguous. It can be either one. As a participle, avidan is masculine subject case form. We're getting a little grammatical here, but and thus has to be taken as referring to Krishna himself, the speaker. And he's the subject, because he's talking. So Avidan is an adjective describing Krishna. It can be translated as, if I am unaware. This is further justified by Krishna as being the subject of the previous verse, which includes the word maya, by me. And since the sages, munayaha, are another subject in the current verse, they're there also, and they're also in a subject case. Therefore, the participle can be understood as referring to them, the sages, also by extension. They're also not aware. The idea thus expressed by Krishna is as follows. If sages, like rivers flowing into the ocean, remaining unaware in their samadhi of my names and form, then they are not really sages. Because the activity of their senses stops completely, they become as if empty of life, devoid of the living soul's defining quality of thoughtfulness, and incapable of experiencing transcendental ecstasy. In the same way, if I ever forget my gopis, if I ever fail to think of them constantly, then I will no longer be Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Or, understanding this in a more radical sense, then my life, Krishna is talking, will come to an end. I will no longer exist. Because this last sense is distasteful, Krishna does not want to cause Uddhava pain by speaking it openly. Divulging to Uddhava the reasons why he feels like this, Krishna says, I am obliged to the gopis because their minds are fixed on me absolutely. They always think of me alone and are most sublimely attracted to me. Dear brother, I therefore have the greatest love for them, but I have to confess that I do not have the same kind of love for anyone else. Not for my parents, my brothers, my queens, my children, my own transcendental body, my abode of Vaikuntha, with all its paraphernalia and associates, or my special residences here in Dwarka and Mathura. All of these I can forget and still remain myself, Sri Krishna. But by forgetting all these, I will not suffer the same pain I would if I were ever to forget the gopis of Braja. If I were ever, not that he ever does it. I am always thinking of the gopis with supreme love and attachment. And in another discussion recorded in some other scripture, Krishna tells Uddhava similarly, this is a verse we can't identify where it comes from, Vyogini naam api paratim vo na yogino gantum api kshamante yat dhyeya rupasya parasya pungso yuyam gata dhyeya padam durapam. The path traversed by you ladies who are experiencing separation from me is unapproachable even by the great yogis. You have realized the goal of meditation. Others can hardly ever achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose form is the most worthy object of meditation. Real yogis, those who are engaged in the Supreme Lord's eternal devotional service, know Krishna as the object of their meditation. Beyond this, however, the gopis are the constant object of Krishna's meditation. Therefore, they are greater than everyone else. So Krishna is revealing his inner mind to his best friend. And we're also being allowed to hear this and being given some guidance by Srila Sanatana Goswami to understand it. By serving Krishna with no selfish concern, Uddhava earned this privilege. To understand this conversation, we should do the same thing. We should follow in the footsteps of these great devotees and learn how to serve Krishna without any conditions, without any selfish motivation. Then we'll understand. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hiyarta prakashante mahatmana. These confidential messages reveal themselves to a devotee who has full faith in Krishna and in his own spiritual master. Okay, any comments on that? Okay. So there's one more verse in this discussion between Krishna and Uddhava from the 11th canto. Matkama ramanam jaram aswarupa vido balaha brahma mam paramam prapu sangat chatasahasrashaha. All those hundreds and thousands of gopis understanding me to be their most charming lover and ardently desiring me in that way were unaware of my actual position. Yet by intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, the supreme, absolute truth. Talking to Uddhava. The gopis achieved, this is commentary, the gopis achieved their highest ambitions by obtaining Krishna as their lover. They are so exalted that by their personal contact, thousands of the outcast women of Raja, because the word here is abalaha, it means women, it means, although literally the word means weak. So in the commentary here, the idea is that not only the gopis, but also other women in the Dham were able to become at least vicarious participants in the Madhurya Ras. That means that they didn't actually associate with Krishna, but they attained the mood of that high level of ecstatic reciprocation. The gopis are so exalted that by their personal contact, thousands of outcast women of Raja, Pulindis and other aborigines, also achieved the rarest goal of life. The word abala means woman, but it also has the literal sense of not strong, and here indicates that the aborigine women lacked the assets of good birth, good behavior, knowledge, and devotion to God. These are usually the qualifications. You want to get the elevated position of a devotee of Krishna, good idea to have a good birth, behave yourself, you know, acquire some philosophical knowledge, and practice devotion. These aborigine women had none of these qualifications. We're also, most of us have not much of these qualifications. They knew nothing about their eternal identity as spirit souls. And because they had never come close enough to Nanda Maharaj's village to see Krishna with their own eyes, they did not know about his all-attractive beauty. They lived way on the outskirts of Vrindavan and were not welcome by the Vrijvasis to enter the village. So they actually only knew about Krishna from rumors. But by accidentally coming into contact in the forest with the grass and leaves smeared with kumkuma from the bodies of the gopis, these aborigine ladies gained the gopis' transcendental association and became infected with the desire to also have Krishna as their lover. Or if we presume that the Pulindis and the other aborigine women must have had knowledge of themselves as eternal souls simply as the automatic effect of their being born in Krishna's holy Dham, the indirect association they had with the gopis then infused them with sublime devotion for Krishna and made them forget all considerations of their eternal identity. So either they were totally ignorant, and just by indirect contact with the particles of kumkum that the gopis' bodies had touched, they became pure devotees. Or else, they were already gyanis, because only liberated souls can even enter the Dham. But they gave up their attachment to jnana and took to the path of pure bhakti by that indirect association. They, the aborigine women, were also ignorant of their own identities in another way. in that they paid no regard to their own unclean condition and unattractive complexions, being helplessly impelled toward Krishna by the conjugal attraction they contracted from the gopis. The Pulindis and others may have been low-class tribal women, but they had the greatest fortune of being attracted to the Supreme Absolute Truth, the darling son of Nanda Maharaj. Their attraction to him was not ordinary, but in the mood of accepting him as the absolute master of their lives, and moreover with the special attitude that he was their unmarried lover. Therefore they had to keep the love they felt for Krishna secret, because as outcasts they had little hope of ever meeting him directly, and any connection they might have with him would be altogether illicit. Thus in the core of their hearts they privately cherished their treasure of prema, experiencing at every moment newer and newer sweetness and the highest possible limits of blissful satisfaction. By having some contact with the gopis, the aborigine women all attained a perfection similar to the gopis, if not in this life, then in the next. So this is what Uddhava prayed for when he was in Vrindavan. Let me be just a bush somewhere in Vrindavan so that the dust from the gopis' feet might touch me. Then my life will be perfect. Not necessary to barge into Krishna's private business in order to get his mercy. Okay, so any comments or questions? Looking again at the narration in the 47th chapter, 10th canto, of the second part, starting with day number 7, starting with verse 38 to the end of the chapter 47. Let us briefly look at that. And Srila Sanatana Goswami has included the prayers that Uddhava speaks to the gopis, his glorification of the gopis. They're repeated in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. We'll look at those and read Sanatana Goswami's comments on them. But first we'll just run down what's happening in this story here. Uddhava relayed Krishna's message to the gopis, and now they're responding to him, their reaction to Krishna's message. First of all, because even though Uddhava was telling him all this stuff about Krishna being the super soul, and don't worry, there's no separation because he's in your hearts, this could be a cause of them being quite frustrated and angry, but actually they were satisfied. Uddhava, one way or another, was reminding them about Krishna, and that's all they needed. If someone can help them remember Krishna, then they're grateful. So they commented that everything is very good now. Krishna has gone to Mathura and he's killed this wicked Kamsa. That's what he went there for. And he's released his father and mother, and now they're free. And Krishna is happy in the company of his friends and relatives. And we only want that Krishna be happy. So everything is good. And I'm sure, or they're asking, is he giving pleasure now to the ladies of Mathura city, even though that pleasure belongs to us? Yeah. But what can we do? He's cheated us, but at least are the ladies of Mathura getting that opportunity to enjoy with Krishna now? We're sure that Krishna has already become very entangled with them. But maybe when he's with his new girlfriends and talking with them freely, maybe sometimes the topic of his old friends of Raja comes up. Does he ever mention us? Does he remember the nights that we spent dancing in Vrindavan Forest? And will he ever come back again and give us our lives back? So this is their comments to Uddhava. It may seem that incongruous. Uddhava is talking philosophy, they're talking, you know, something that's totally different, but not really. This is the manifestation of the highest philosophical understanding. Krishna is the goal of life. Krishna's satisfaction is the purpose of all existence. And that's what they're expressing, their interest that Krishna is happy and that maybe someday they'll regain his association. But now they're lamenting, how can we expect that he'll ever come back to us? Now he's enjoying, he's got his kingdom, he's got his queens, he's eternally the master, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And who are we? We're just some useless girls living in the forest. So why is he ever going to want to show any interest in us anymore? He's optikama, self-satisfied. He's the original self-satisfied sage. So what does he need the association of some women for? What does he need any woman for? So we should understand, like, as the prostitute Pingala understood her stories told by Lord Dattatreya in the 11th canto in the Avadhuta Gita. Pingala the prostitute, not being able to, no customers were coming that night, so she finally learned the lesson of renunciation. Well, renunciation is the source of highest happiness. So like Pingala, they mention her by name. We also now understand that renunciation is the cause of highest happiness. But we can't give up Krishna, thinking about Krishna. You know, we understand theoretically we can't do it. We can't renounce Krishna. We can't give up our hope that someday we might gain him again. Anyway, who? Is there anybody in the whole universe who can give up talking about Krishna? Once one has gained a taste for that. Even Goddess of Fortune, he ignores her. He doesn't show her any reciprocation, but she never gives up his residing on his chest. So who can give up Krishna anyway? Here we are, without Krishna in Vrindavan, but look at all the rivers, the hills, the forest. Here's where Krishna and Balaram enjoyed. Here's where he played his flute. So all these things constantly remind us about Krishna. These are udipanas. Causes remembering Krishna. There's no question of us ever forgetting him, even if he never comes back. So they finally pray, Hey Nata, Hey Rama, Nata, Vrajanat, Ardinashanaha, Nashana, O Lord, O Lord of Rama, O Lord of Raja, O destroyer of the stress of your devotees, please save your Gokula from the ocean of distress. So they felt, the gopis having said that, they felt somewhat relieved, thanks to Uddhava's delivering Krishna's message. And they thanked Uddhava very much and offered him proper worship. And he was pleased to stay in Vrindavan for some time, for several months. He gave great pleasure to the gopis and the other Vrijabhasis by always talking about Krishna's pastimes. He gave Ramayam Asa Gokulam. He gave great pleasure to all the inhabitants of Vraja. And as Jiva Goswami explains in the commentary to verse 54, he made a special point of taking care to keep Nanda and Yashoda satisfied, always be concerned about how they were feeling. So that those months passed just like there were a few moments, because they were constantly, everyone was constantly engaged in Krishna Katha, thanks to Uddhava. And Uddhava took great pleasure in seeing the Vrindavan Dham, the rivers, the mountains, and so on. And he took even more pleasure in being able to do this service for the Vrijvasis to remind them about Krishna. One way that he, according to Sridhar Swami, that he did this reminding, not only him talking, but he would ask them questions. When he saw various places in Vrindavan, he would ask, what pastimes did Krishna perform here? And the Vrijvasis would have the chance to recollect and tell him. So, verse 57 says that Uddhava actually was pleased to see the gopis' distress, because he knew it was not what it seems to be on the surface. He knew that what they're exhibiting are the symptoms of the most perfect dedication to the Absolute Truth. This is what all progressive persons are striving for. The karmis, jnanis, yogis, the Vaishnavas are all striving to get this perfection of complete surrender and dedication to Krishna. And here, these simple women of Raja are exhibiting the highest achievement of this. So, therefore, he was delighted to see, delighted to have the opportunity to witness. And then he sang six verses glorifying the gopis. He addressed the gopis and glorified them. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, says that Uddhava would sing these six verses every day. This was his sadhana while he was in Vrindavan. He didn't just recite them once off the top of his head, but he would sing them every day. Okay, now that brings us back to Bhagavatamrita. Any comments? Questions? Yes, I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. This is texts. No, no. 10th canto, chapter 47, verses 58 to 63, which are also retold, recited by Parikshit Maharaj to his mother in part 2, chapter 7, verses 147 to 152 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, with commentary by Sanatana Goswami. That's what we're going to read right now. Any other questions? Okay. So these are the actual verses from the actual verses of Uddhava's glorification of the gopis, spoken to them. Eta param tanubhuto bhuvi gopavadvo govinda eva nikilatmani rudha bhava vanchanti yat bhava biyo munayo vayangcha kim ramha janma bir anantakatara sasya. Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahman, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Okay, commentary by Srila Sanatana Goswami. This verse and the five verses following it, text 147 to 152, were spoken by Sri Uddhava during his visit to Vrindavan. Uddhava's testimony as to the supreme position of the gopis is very credible, because his own reputation as an exalted Vaishnav is extremely solid. He is a favorite student of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, and is a trusted advisor of Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna is not at all hesitant to praise Uddhava enthusiastically. Ataitad paramam guhyam Shrinvato yadunandana sugopyam abhivakshyami twangme brityak suritsaka. My dear Uddhava, Krishna said, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, Because you are my servant, well-wisher and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you.
Vasudevo Bhagavatam Tvam tu Bhagavateshwaham.
Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva. And indeed you, Uddhava, represent me among the devotees.
Natata me priyatama atma yonir na shankaraha na cha sankarshano na shvir naiv atma chayata bhavan.
My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarsana, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self, are as dear to me as you are. When Uddhava met with the gopis in Vrindavan, he tried to counteract the agony of their separation from Krishna by using all his diplomatic skill in presenting Krishna's message to them. He found, however, that his attempt had no positive effect on the gopis. Rather, they became only more immersed in the ocean of distress after hearing Krishna's message.
We just read that the gopis were satisfied and he was satisfied, but it's a very complex situation. They're burning in this torment, and at the same time they're satisfied. Totally contradictory, but Sanat Goswami says that his telling the message of Krishna made them feel, the gopis feel more distress.
Yes?
Satisfied and surrendered, could they be used interchangeably
and synonymously? Well, it's a causal thing. If you surrender, then you'll be satisfied. Yeah. They're not equivalent. If I feel satisfied with myself, I may not bother to surrender to Krishna. So we don't want to be self-satisfied. We want to gain our satisfaction from surrendering to Krishna. So it's just that one leads to the other.
What about acceptance?
Acceptance?
Acceptance.
Of?
Yes.
They can't accept that. You know, if they were to conclude that Krishna's never going to come back, then that would be the end. You know, they have to hold on to some hope, even though it's irrational. You know, they have to hope that Krishna may come back someday. They can't accept the facts. They can't. That's why Krishna has to lie to them. He can't speak the truth to them, the literal truth, the bare truth, because that would kill them. Okay. Krishna is forced to break his promise to protect his devotees. He can't even tell the truth. Yes. The present which? Yeah, I heard that. For them, there's no difference. They don't have to go anywhere. You know, for those who are actual participants, they already have access to the invisible pastimes. We being in the material world, being in the network of material time and space, we think that there's two different places, but they're not really different. Yeah, it's only from our point of view that there's a separation that Vraja is 1,200 kilometers away. And Golok is zillions of light years away, but that's an illusion. They're actually not separate. They're not different.
But you said that Krishna
had to lie to them. Instead of that's what he said. He said, "I'm in your hearts. I'm the super soul. I'm in your everybody's heart." That's what he meant by it. Is that You're eternally enjoying with me Maya Prakritali. That was a secret message behind those statements that sounded like dry philosophy.
is that I'm with you all the time because we're always connected in the invisible pastimes, and you know it. You know, in this transcendental schizophrenia, you're thinking that you're separated, but you're not. Okay, that we can't understand. I mean, that's illogical. That seems like classical insanity, but that's the spiritual situation. Is that they're simultaneously experiencing the separation, and they're also connected with Krishna in his invisible pastimes. Sadhakas rarely get a glimpse of the invisible pastimes, but those who are eternal associates of Krishna, they're constantly experiencing them eternally. And there's no distinction between the material and spiritual world for them. Okay, when you get to that level, then there's no difference between Goloka and Gokula. I can say that, but I don't know what that means. Yeah, I mean, not that. Yes, yes. And in Krishna's Aprakrita Lila, he never goes away. The Aprakrita Lila, his invisible pastimes, are eternally manifested on this earth. So therefore, there's no difference. All right? Which? He doesn't actually go away in his invisible pastimes. He actually goes away only in the visible pastimes. He goes away. We don't have it here, but if you read, get the third volume of the Bhagavatamrita and read the next to last chapter, Krishna, yes, Akura comes, takes Krishna away in Goloka, in the spiritual world. Akura comes, takes Krishna away to Mathura. Krishna goes to Mathura and kills Kamsa. And then Krishna comes back a week later. And then 2 weeks later, Akura comes again. And Krishna goes to Mathura again and kills Kamsa again. You know, it's going on like that. There's no limitation in material time and space. That's what's going on in Goloka. So, you know, you try to define where there's separation and where there isn't. It's beyond logical analysis. Okay. Where am I? Okay. Yes? Yeah, all the Vrajvasis, so all the rasas that are special to Vraja, have this aspect of virabhava also, but not the same degree of intensity as experienced by the gopis. But all the Vrajvasis are experiencing great separation from Krishna. Nandini and Yashoda are experiencing everybody, even the animals, even the plants and trees. Yeah, yeah, every living being in Vraja, in their own rasa, even in. Some say there's no Shantaras, but there are trees and rocks, and they're also experiencing. Like Shantaras? Yes. Everybody. So there are the devotees in all those rasas, servants also. Yeah, there are servants in Nanda Maharaj's household. So they don't have an intimate, friendly relationship with Krishna, but they're also feeling great separation in their own rasa. That's the nature of the Virabhava, is that one feels more closely, more vividly Krishna's presence and separation. This in general, but again, it's completely manifested in the Madhurya Rasa. Yeah, because I'm starting to talk way above my head, but it's what I've read out of books. That there are aspects of bhava that only manifest in Madhurya Rasa, in the higher levels of Madhurya Rasa. There's pranaya, mana, these special ecstasies of intimate relationships. You don't have them in the lower rasas, in ordinary friendship and so on. So there is ecstasy of separation, but not the same deep complexity of it that's experienced by the gopis. According to the level, of their sarupa. Okay. Anyway, this is way beyond what I have any realization of, and I should just talk about what I know. So I'll just read for now. In this first verse, Uddhava declares the gopis to be greater than all aspirants for liberation, all self-realized liberated saints, and all other devotees of the personality of Godhead. Only they, the goddesses of fortune who reside in the cowherd village of Sri Nanda, have realized the full potential of human life. It is only the gopis have realized the full potential of human life. It is suitable that these greatest, so let them laugh at us, you Hare Krishnas, you don't know how to live life, but actually Krishna's devotees and the most intimate devotees of Krishna are those who now know how to live human life. It is suitable that these greatest of all Vaishnavas, the gopis, are human beings and residents of the earth. Because the residents of higher planets like Indra's Swarga enjoy so much power and sense gratification that it is practically impossible for them to achieve any comparable love for Krishna. In other words, the demigods and sages living in the higher regions of the universe can hardly ever perfect their lives as the gopis of Vraja have. Or else, understanding the words tanu brito bhuvi, in another way, the gopis deliver the fallen conditioned souls of this earth by sharing the great gift of prema bhakti. They nourish and sustain the devotional life of the inhabitants of the earth. The benign influence of their natural compassion and other virtues are supremely beneficial for everyone, because the gopis possess the greatest possible love for the inner lord of all souls, the son of the king of the cowherds, who is famous as Govinda because he is the Indra of the cows. Moreover, they love him as the lord of their hearts with disregard for everything else, as an unmarried lover and illicit paramour. They have enjoyed with Krishna with the unprecedented festival of the Rasa-lila, and now they have deprived Uddhava of his wise sobriety by the all-attractive exhibition of their transformations of viraha-bhava. For a long time, the gopis had been quietly fostering in their hearts the pain of separation from Krishna. But after hearing Krishna's message from Uddhava, they could no longer hold themselves back. And Uddhava became a witness to the uncontrolled waves of their complete distress. They didn't mean, they didn't intend to openly express all of this in front of Uddhava, but they couldn't help it. The ecstasy of the gopis in separation makes the whole world cry in sympathy and brings Vaishnavas to the verge of death. The phrase Nikhilatmani has another confidential meaning in this verse. The soul of everybody, Nikhilatmani. Krishna is not only Nikhilatma in the obvious sense of the soul of all beings, but he is also cherished by the gopis as their very life and soul, in such a way that other devotees cannot imitate. No one loves Krishna as unconditionally as do the gopis. Renounced aspirants for liberation are afraid of material existence, and liberated, self-satisfied Vaishnav devotees of the Lord, each understand Krishna according to their individual capacities, as the supreme goal and the supreme fruit of spiritual endeavors. The mumukshus and the mukta Vaishnavs, the liberated and those who want liberation, admire and aim for the love that the gopis possess, but usually they cannot obtain it. Uddhava considers himself also in the category of sincere devotees of Krishna who can only admire the gopis' prema from a distance. That's what he thinks of himself.
But someone may question Uddhava. Isn't Lord Brahma the greatest of Vaishnavas? Isn't he superior to all aspirants for liberation and to all liberated devotees, since he is the original guru of the path of devotional service? He sits on the highest seat of sovereignty in the universe and is endowed with many excellences. So, if the gopis are so exalted, why did they come to earth as lowly cowherd women, instead of accepting births like Brahmas, in which they would be worshipped by the whole world? Uddhava answers this by stating very simply that anyone who has a taste for hearing topics about the unlimited lords, Krishna and Balaram, sees no use in taking birth as Lord Brahma, even numerous times. Instead, such a Rasika Bhakta finds a birth of Brahma to be an obstacle to cultivating the taste for Ananta Katha, because it creates pride and various other distractions. Therefore, the gopis, intent on tasting the honey found at Sri Govinda's lotus feet, choose to take birth as simple daughters of cowherds in preference to birth as Lord Brahma on the opposite end of the spectrum of life. Or else the rules of Sanskrit grammar allow Krishna Katha Rasasya to be split up differently as Katha Avrasasya, for one who has no taste for hearing these topics. If someone is not interested in Ananta Katha, what can he gain by taking birth as creator of the universe? Nothing of real value. Attraction to Ananta Katha is the only real fruit of renunciation, liberation, and devotional practice. Anyone who lacks this taste cannot be honestly called a renunciant, a liberated sage, or a Vaishnava. Or else, another interpretation, in these words, Uddhava is explaining why the gopis, although they are on the highest level of self-realization, abandon the standards of civilized behavior established as the principles of dharmas in the teaching of the Vedas. For the gopis, or indeed anyone who has a taste for the topics of the unlimited Lord, the manifestation of Vedic knowledge on the lips and in the heart is not as important as attraction to Krishna Katha. Yes, for the gopis, or indeed anyone who has a taste for the topics of the unlimited Lord, the manifestation of Vedic knowledge on the lips and in the heart is not as important as attraction to Krishna Katha. Brahma Janma can thus be interpreted as meaning the appearance within one of Vedic knowledge, because Brahma means the Vedas, so the birth of the Vedas in your heart. Who cares for that? Or else Brahma can be taken as meaning knowledge of the pure self, and Janma as meaning the means of this knowledge, the generation of this knowledge. That is to say, one who has realized Ananta Katha Rasa has nothing more to gain by theoretical knowledge of himself as spirit distinct from matter. And what real use can be made of Vedic knowledge or knowledge of the self by someone who has no Ananta Katha Rasa? This rasa is the only substantial result to be gained from studying the Vedas and inquiring into the identity of the self. Vedic study and self-realization are only means toward this final goal. Once one has reached the goal, the means by which one got there can be put aside as no longer useful, just as a person who might light a lamp to find something in his room before going to sleep, but once he has located the item, he can put out the light and can lay down to rest. And just as one who has paid to take a boat to the other side of the river can forget about the boat after finishing his crossing. In the contrary case, when one remains stubbornly attached to the means without ever attaining the goal, all he accomplishes is useless effort, like beating empty husks of grain. Anyone situated in Ananta Katha Rasa is thus a superior person. What to speak, then, of those most fortunate of all women who had the rarest quality of love for Sri Govinda? Of what value for these gopis are the ordinary Vedic standards of culture and the dry realizations of selfish meditation? One of the six verses. Any comments? Okay, we'll read the next one. Kwema striyo vanacharir vyabichara dushtaha Krishne kwa chaisha paramatmani rudha bhava nanvishwaro nanubhajato vidusho pisakshat treyas tanot yagadaraja ivopa yuktaha. How amazing it is that these simple women who wander about the forest, seemingly spoiled by improper behavior, have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Still, it is true that the Supreme Lord Himself awards His blessings even to an ignorant worshipper. Just as the best medicine works, even when taken by a person ignorant of its ingredients. Okay. Commentary? Uddhava obviously spoke these words ironically. He is considering himself unqualified to have the gopis' association, which he has achieved only by the undeserved mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna sent him there. The gopis are roamers of the forest. Their intense love for Krishna impels them to wander about Vrindavan forest, where so many of his pastimes took place. Comparing himself to the gopis, Uddhava points out that Krishna's most dear devotees, they are Krishna's most dear devotees, while he has deviated in so many ways from the path of devotion. He has committed serious aparads, not carrying out Krishna's instructions, and failed to develop confidence in the process of bhakti yoga. In his own view, he is very fallen, especially in comparison to the gopis. This is actually how he feels. I don't know how he can justify that, but he thinks that he doesn't do what Krishna tells him to do. He's committed so many aparads, and he has no faith in devotional service. Another sense in which the gopis are forest roamers is that in their distress of separation from Krishna, they are living in the most secluded part of the Vrindavan forest, wandering about in the impassable wilderness. Such is the current condition of these transcendental goddesses of fortune of Sri Nanda's cowherd community. They are totally helpless under the sway of their unexcelled prema. The conditions of Uddhava's life are completely contrary to the condition of the gopis, he's thinking. He is a male, lives in the bustling metropolis, where his residence is fixed. He enjoys all comforts and is therefore unfit for wandering about Vrindavan forest. He is proud of his philosophical... He's thinking this about himself. He is proud of his philosophical knowledge of Krishna's identity and so cannot gain the treasure of the gopis' topmost love for Krishna. He thus judges himself a most fallen wretch in comparison to the gopis with their countless saintly qualities. He thinks that he will never deserve their association. He refers to himself in the plural, dushtaha, either because of the honor he gained by having a little association with the gopis in Vrindavan, or else because he is speaking on behalf of Sri Narada and Akrura also. He does not refer to the gopis explicitly here, but simply calls them these women, imaha, thus indicating the awe he feels in their presence. Certainly nowhere else but in the hearts of the gopis can such pure, elevated love of Krishna be seen. And certainly only by the special power of Krishna's devotional service, Uddhava thinks, has even such a foolish person as himself had the privilege of witnessing these glories of the gopis. Krishna is Ishvara, the independent supreme controller. He is free to give appropriate rewards for any service done to him. He can reciprocate with his devotees however he wishes. He can shower his kindness even on an ignorant person who knows nothing of his greatness and the greatness of his servants, but who somehow or other has rendered a little service to one of his devotees, even while viewing the devotee and the service with materialistic eyes. If any person takes even a slight step toward accepting his service by approaching his devotee, Krishna immediately reciprocates with all kinds of assistance and blessings. He acts like a powerful medicine which is effective even on patients completely ignorant of its properties. Or, alternatively, the word nanu, certainly, can be alternately understood as two separate words, na, not, and nu, indeed. Indeed, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is capable of doing whatever he wants and of refraining from whatever he doesn't want to do. Or, if he wants, he can transform reality, undoing any situation to change it into what he prefers. He possesses unlimited, all-powerful energies by which he fulfills all his desires. Thus he can award the highest perfection of life to anyone, not only the wise saint who worships him constantly without deviation, but also to someone who has worshipped him only irregularly, anubhajataha, or even to someone who has never worshipped him at all, but by some good fortune or other has come into contact with his devotees. And if Krishna wants, he can bestow this understanding, undeserved reward, without any delay. Sakshad Shreyastanoti. He can expand this mercy in a way visible to all, not only to a selected few. He can make his mercy so obvious that it does not have to be searched out by the conjectures of philosophical speculators. Krishna's mercy thus acts like a rare, most potent medicine, effective even without being swallowed and digested, but just by being even brought near to the patient and being smelled by him. Okay. Two very famous verses. Let me just read them. Next two verses. Nayam Shriyonga Unitantarate Prasada. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita several times. One of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's favorite verses. Nayam Shriyonga Unitantarate Prasada Swaryoshitam Nalina Gandarucham Kutonya Rasotsave Syabuja Danda Grihita Kanta Labdashi Shamya Udagad Vrajavallabhinam. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasalila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing ever imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women, who are very beautiful according to the material estimation. Commentary. Uddhava is astonished over the fact that although Mahalakshmi, the consort of Lord Narayan, is famous as his beloved, she cannot have the same favor of the Supreme Lord as is enjoyed by the gopis of Vrindavan. If even the Supreme Goddess of Fortune is less fortunate than these gopis, then what to speak of everyone else? Here, in one more verse, the next verse he speaks, also very famous, where he expresses his inner desire, his ambition, the ambition of Uddhava. Asam Oho Charanan Venu Jushama Hamsyan Vrindavane kimapi gulmala toshadinam yadushya jam swajanam aryapatam chahitva pejur mukunda padavim srutibir vimrigyam. The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up, and they have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search out by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. Reading assignments for the eighth day is... from the 10th canto, there are verses from the 70th and 71st chapter. Okay, so 10th canto, everything from the 70th and 71st chapter. There's a total of 5 pages to read, not that much. You can also, if you finish that early, you can move into the next day's reading, because we're going to have the last day's reading is going to be a big chunk, so you might want to read the next 2 days' material tonight. So here's the reading assignment for the 9th day. There are verses from the 11th canto, from the 6th chapter, from the 7th chapter, from the 19th chapter, and the 29th chapter. In other words, everything from the 11th canto. So you can read, if you get enough time tonight, everything from chapter 70 and 71 of the 10th canto, and everything from the 11th canto that's in the booklet. It's all in verse order. Okay, any questions? All right, so we can stop here. Thank you, all glories, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Uddhava Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam.